Transportation, Finance, and Policy Committee for this Friday, March 3rd. And we have one bill on the agenda, House File 409. Before we get to that, I'd request approval of the minutes. That's our first item of on the agenda. We do have a quorum as well. Representative Petersburg.
Thank you.
Turn this on. Thank you, Mr. Chair. I would like to move the approval of yesterday's minutes.
Thank you. Is there discussion? All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All opposed, the motion prevails. Members, House File 409, our motion today, my motion is to lay this bill over for possible inclusion in a omnibus transportation finance bill. We will proceed with an amendment labeled A4. We'll incorporate that amendment first, and then the author can give a brief overview of the bill. We'll hear testimony, and we'll have committee discussion and amendments. And this is the only bill on the agenda. We know that there is a lot of interest in this, and a variety of perspectives that members want to share. So we will have the entire hearing devoted to this. So with that, welcome, Chair Cagle. And why don't you please let us know about the A4 amendment.
Thank you, members. So the A4...
I did move the bill, I think, but I'll move it again in case there was any confusion. I'll move House File 409 for possible inclusion in the omnibus finance bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And did you want me to describe the A4?
Yes, please. Okay. And we're also moving the A4 amendment.
So thank you, members. The A4 amendment also would leverage federal funding. And so what we are looking at is adding this to the role. We're adding the Coon Rapids Station. We're also adding rolling stock. And then the amount of the Northern Lights Express capital. So it would be, this assumes that we're having four round trip trains a day. It assumes the full cost of the Northern Lights Express capital costs. And then these figures are also inflated to the 2026 dollars. And so that is the amendment. It also creates the special revenue fund from the passenger rail account. And so that is half of the state dollars collected on the sales tax or property tax side, I'm sorry.
Okay, is there a discussion? Sorry, is there a discussion?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Representative Gagel, could you just give us a rundown as to the rationale and the need for the Coon Rapids Station?
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. So the Coon Rapids Station is a joint station that could serve for both NLX and the extension of the Empire Builder. So we're just kind of getting ready for hopefully what will be coming down the pike.
Representative Petersburg.
Thank you for that clarification. I thought that was the reason, but I want to make sure it was on the record. Thank you.
Any further discussion to the A4? Again, we'll probably have more extensive discussion later, but this is simply to get the bill in the shape the author would like us to consider it. Hearing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. All those opposed, the motion prevails. The A4 amendment is now incorporated, and we will hear more about House File 409 now as amended. Chair Cagle.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. When I was thinking about this morning, I was thinking about Representative Mary Murphy and how I would love to hear her stories about taking the train. But when I actually went to school at UMD, lived for a number of years in Duluth, and when I first went to school, we tried to do it without a car, and I quickly complained to my parents enough that they allowed me to bring my car up to school. I also think about my my 91-year-old grandma who is living in Silver Bay, and every time we want to bring her down for Easter, Christmas type of stuff, we have to arrange for somebody to go up there. And so I just think about how this would really allow options to folks wanting to go between Twin Cities and Duluth. So with that, I'll turn it over to my testifiers.
Thank you so much, Chair Cagle. So we have some time, of course, but I think if testifiers could keep their comments brief, then we can move along to the discussion of the bill. But we do want to hear from folks, especially those who traveled a long distance to get here, like Commissioner Keith Nelson, who came all the way from the Iron Range. St. Louis County Commissioner is up first.
Mr. Chair, I can move to the table so that we can...
Okay. I'll call, and then I just, Jamie Edwards is on deck. So I'll call the testifiers, but let people know who's after that. Commissioner, so good to see you in person. I know you've testified on this bill a couple times on Zoom before. So we're good to have you in person, and thanks for making the trip all the way down here. Please state your name for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you, Chair Hornstein and representatives. My name is Keith Nelson. I am a commissioner from St. Louis County. I've been on the county board for 20 years. I've been working on this project for the last 18. I'm excited to be here today. This is a day we've long waited for, to be in front of this committee and a comparable committee over in the Senate. We have an opportunity here. And I need to define this just a little bit, because the district I represent in St. Louis County will be, the closest part of that district will be nearly 20 miles from this train track. And yet I firmly believe that the people that I represent in central St. Louis County will be affected by this project, and in a very, very positive way. So. It's why I've had this commitment to this project, even though it does not, and I want to repeat, does not touch my district, nor will it ever touch the district I represent. This project has numerous benefits, and you'll hear a number of testifiers today that will talk about those, but I want to touch on a couple of things because I think it's really critical at this juncture in time. BNSF, the existing track we're going to be running down, BNSF is a very, very safe and very good rail provider for the United States. And any improvements that we will be doing with this project along this line will only serve to enhance the safety of that line and of those roads that cross that line on its way from Duluth to the Twin Cities. So with that, with the discussion we see in the nation today about train and train travel, wanted to assure everyone in this room that safety is the number one priority, has been since day one, since we started working on this project, and it still continues to be the number one priority. Mr. Chair, I have, at last count, in St. Louis County, over 17,000 veterans. This train would be their preferred method to get to medical care here in Minneapolis. And 18,000 veterans, we kept hearing that number is going to continue to go down. Well, the truth is that it has not. We were down to 14,000, but we're back up to over or to that 18,000 mark at this point. So healthcare is critical, and getting here to the VA hospital is critical for my veterans. And I say my veterans because everyone seems to have a passion for the veteran community when there's a war on, and we seem to forget that when there's not. But in these times, our veteran community matters more than ever. Mr. Chair, I don't have a lot more to say on this project other than the commitment of the St. Louis County St. Louis and Lake County Regional Rail Authority has been there for all of these years. We continue to look forward to this project coming to fruition. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Commissioner. And on a personal note, we were debating a bill on homelessness yesterday, so I invoked our mutual friend, former St. Louis County Commissioner Steve O'Neill, and I know he was a friend of yours, and if he were here on Earth with us, I know he would be smiling and supporting this bill passionately. I've had many conversations with him before he passed about it.
Mr. Chair, when I get to come down and see you, I get to remember him. Thank you.
Thank you so much. Appreciate your testimony and your traveling. Next, we have Jamie Edwards from the Mille Lacs Band, and then following Jamie Edwards, we'll have Ishmael Cuevas from Amtrak. Welcome to the committee, and please state your name for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Yes, good morning, Chair Holstein and members, I'm sorry, Hornstein. My apologies.
The mayor of Burnsville called me that once, so you're in good company.
My apologies. And members of the committee, my name is Jamie Edwards, and I'm Special Advisor of Intergovernmental Affairs for the Mille Lacs Band of Ojibwe. I'm here today to testify in support of House File 409, which would help provide inner-city passenger rail service from Minneapolis to Duluth. The Mille Lacs Band of Ojibwe supports this bill for the following reasons. First, this train will stop in Hinckley. Grand Casino Hinckley is one of the largest employers in East Central Minnesota. Before the pandemic, our casinos at Mille Lacs and Hinckley employed nearly 3,000 people, and our Hinckley property averaged approximately 3.5 million visitors each year, generating nearly 7 million one-way trips per year along the Interstate 35 corridor. If approved, the NLX Intercity Passenger Rail would provide a cost-effective way to bring more tourists, employees, students, and additional business development opportunities into our region of the state. This project is also environmentally sound, and with more people taking trains north from the Twin Cities, car admissions, and all that comes with that would be greatly diminished. With the increased number of people potentially traveling the corridor via train, highway congestion would be reduced and public safety would be enhanced. Employees and others in the region would have a much-needed additional transportation option and a more cost-effective way to live or work in the metro area or live and work at stops along the corridor. There are other benefits. On a train, people can operate laptops, portable devices, and spend time relaxing while they are on their way to work or on their way home. People living in East Central Minnesota would have another way to get to work in the metro area. If a person wishes to keep living in Pine County but work in the Twin Cities, the train could provide safe and reliable transportation even when the weather's bad. And we know that as Minnesotans, weather gets bad. For these reasons and others, we offer our support of House File 409. Like many others, we believe this is a good investment in Minnesota's future, creating a greater connection between the Twin Cities and stops along the Duluth corridor, providing a new, clean, efficient alternative form of transportation that would benefit the entire state. Thank you.
Thank you so much for your testimony and for traveling down to see us today. So next up we have Ishmael Cuevas from Amtrak, and then following Ishmael we have Joel Mueller. Welcome to
Thank
the
you.
Committee.
Good morning, Mr.
We appreciate your presence as well. Please state your name for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Good morning. My name is Ismael Cuevas. You all can call me Ishmael. Came here from Chicago last night on the Empire Building. Builder was very, very excited to take the future TCMC route, which I'll talk about a little bit in my presentation. I'm going to talk about two things, kind of like the overview and history of Amtrak, how it was created, some of the Midwest service and ridership statistics, and then I'll let my colleagues discuss more specifics in the NLX. I am the manager of government affairs for Amtrak. Amtrak is a corporation that was created by Congress in 1970 to operate the nation's passenger rail system. After decades of decline under competition from the growing highway and aviation networks, the American public sought from Congress a solution for the inability of the private railroad sector to sustain a profitable passenger rail service. That's why we were created. After being signed into law by President Nixon, Amtrak assumed control of a slimmed-down network previously operated by 23 separate railroad companies. Over five decades of efforts by our dedicated employees, variable support from Congress and administrations, but continued support from the public and communities, We saved passenger rail mode in America from extinction and have actually grown ridership. From 16 million in our first year to 32 million just before the pandemic, many feel that our time has come. The foresight of those that made the decision to create us rather than let the passenger train go extinct positions the nation to capitalize on those efforts to provide a relevant service to communities across the country and Minnesota. The public seeks out rail for its ability to connect the nation with a greener mode that offers mobility for everyone, just like Chair Cagle was talking about earlier, and builds resilient communities, rural, suburban, and urban. Amtrak is in its 52nd year of operation and is ready to work with the states, communities, and other railroads to capitalize on the 2021 bipartisan infrastructure law to invest at least $66 billion over the next 4 years and to improve an expanded passenger train service. Since the height of the pandemic, when we saw steep declines in ridership as much as 95%, ridership has come roaring back. As a matter of fact, some of the trains that I was looking at have been sold out. I live in Chicago, and so that is the hub. As I move across the different states in the Midwest, constantly we're having sellouts. But it tells you how much we've bounced back. We are on track too. For the first time ever, need no federal operating support to run the network. We're working hard to return to that level of customer travel and financial performance. During COVID, Congress saw fit to support the down period with appropriations to keep most of our essential services in place for those needing to travel, especially in rural communities. By spring, we will have restored all of our service. By the end of the spring, we will have restored all our service, some 305 daily trains to 500 cities across our 21,000-mile network. And later this year, we will partner in partnership with Minnesota and Wisconsin, double the service frequency along the St. Paul-Milwaukee-Chicago route, the so-called TCMC corridor. Corridors like the Twin Cities, Milwaukee-Chicago are a key component of the vision we revealed to the public and Congress in 2021. Amtrak connects us that calls for 25 expanded routes, 39 new routes, and service to 160 communities that today do not have any passenger train service at all. We expect, if our vision is implemented, that the number of annual trips taken by Amtrak train in America will increase by 200 million, by 20 million. Connecting population centers of between 100 and 400 miles apart is a market segment where passenger rail can compete. Trip times competitive with driving will give travelers another productive, economical, safe travel options and juice the economies of stations, communities with thousands of new consumers annually patronizing stores, staying in hotels, making hospital visits, conducting meetings, and reconnecting with our families. And I think some of our colleagues from the chamber will be talking about that in the next few presentations. In other states in the Midwest, towns like Herman and Warrensburg in Missouri, Normal and Carbondale in Illinois, Holland and Ann Arbor in Michigan use train stations as economic engines to attract tourists, business travelers, and students. One of the really interesting parts of my job is when I travel to different parts and meet with chambers, they always talk about the importance of Amtrak service, whether it's for business, whether it's for people coming into town for holidays. It's incredible to see how much money is being spent by not just tourists, right? People in the next town over that have the connection. We want to bring that option to Hinckley, Cambridge, and Duluth. NLX is included in the Amtrak Connexus vision for expansion of new routes that travel demand shows merits frequent passenger rail service. We have been excited to partner with you, Governor Walz, and the Minnesota DOT to successfully apply for grants to upgrade the infrastructure of the whole spur to accommodate on-time passenger trains. The Federal Railroad Administration application period for the Corridor Identification Program, or the Corridor ID Program, is now open until March 27th. The FRA Corridor ID program will create a pipeline of projects around the country to advance rail expansion projects through environmental review, planning, design, and all the way through construction. We look forward to working with Minnesota to advance NLX through the same process. We presume NLX has a leg up on other projects as the environmental review process is done. My understanding is that the project can move forward to design and construction with a state match to the presumed 80% federal funding match should the route be included in the National Corridor Expansion Plan. The addition of new passenger train service from the Twin Cities to the Twin Ports, Winona, Milwaukee, Chicago, or to other out-of-state locations in the future will dramatically enhance the travel options for motorists and non-motorists alike and reconnect our small rural cities to the economic engines of the region. Of Amtrak's 300 daily trains on 40 routes in 46 states, half are operated in partnership with state governments, like the ones that I mentioned, Wisconsin, Missouri, Michigan, Oklahoma, Virginia, North Carolina, and Texas. Each of those new states, plus new ones like Kansas, Arizona, Colorado, Idaho, and Ohio, have embraced our Amtrak vision and will apply for participation in the Federal Corridor ID program to add passenger rail service to their states. Our network development team is ready to partner with Minnesota to bring the NLX route to fruition. Thank you, and I'm happy to take any questions.
Thank you. And I think what we'd like to do is, I know that there's at least one question. Are you able to stick around for a little bit here?
Yes, I can.
Okay. I think what we'll do, members, is have individuals go through their testimony, and then if anyone wants to question any of the testifiers at the end of all the testimony, we'll allow for that. Okay, and thank you for sticking around and for your testimony. Next, we have Joel Mueller, and then following Joel, Daniel Fanning. Welcome back to the committee, and please state your name for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Okay. Good morning, Chair Hornstein, members of the committee. I'm Joel Mueller with the Brotherhood of Locomotive Engineers and Trainmen. I want to thank you for the opportunity to testify before the committee on behalf of rail labor in support of HF 409. Our organization represents the locomotive engineers, conductors, and brakemen that would staff the trains of the Northern Lights Express should this funding be approved. Transportation of goods and people by rail is one of the most fuel-efficient modes of transportation. By approving state funding for this project, Minnesota would give travelers along this route a safe and efficient transportation alternative, reducing the number of vehicles on the road. With the rising cost of gas, many Minnesotans are realizing the economic and environmental benefits of traveling by train. With more people working from home, the NLX service will allow more workforce development outside the metro area. For those working in the metro area, the Northern Lights Express will give commuters along this corridor another transportation option that will allow them to turn commute time into work time. In addition to the economic and environmental benefits this proposed passenger rail expansion would bring to the communities along the NLX corridor, the entire state would benefit from the economic impact the additional jobs created during the construction phase of the project. Once service is up and running, locomotive engineers, conductors, and brakemen would be needed to operate the trains. Additional employees would be needed to maintain the track and signal system to the high standard that is required for passenger service. These jobs are good-paying, mostly union jobs, and provide some of the best health, welfare, and retirement benefits to their employees. In order to provide safe and reliable service, improvements would need to be made along the infrastructure along this corridor. Additional mainline trackage and sidings would need to be constructed. Grade crossings would be upgraded. These improvements would make the transportation of goods by freight or by the freight railroads along this corridor safer and more efficient. Minnesota railroad workers stand ready to operate and maintain the trains of the Northern Lights Express. We urge the members of this committee to support and approve the state funding for this project. I want to thank you for the opportunity to testify today, and I'd be happy to answer any questions you may have.
Okay. Thank you very much, Mr. Mueller. Next up, we have a couple of folks from the business community, Daniel Fanning from the Duluth Area Chamber, and then following Daniel, we have Hannah Zinn from the Minneapolis Regional Chamber. Welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record and proceed with your testimony, and thanks for making the trip down.
Good morning, Mr. Chair. Good morning, members. Thank you for the opportunity. My name is Daniel Fanning. I serve as the Vice President of the Duluth Area Chamber of Commerce, and on behalf of our nearly 1,000 members in the Duluth area, we are here in strong support of the NLX and appreciate your leadership and appreciate our chief author's leadership on this bill. As you can imagine, as you've already heard from some of our testifiers, this would be a huge economic boon in an area that's already seen some economic impact and already seeing economic uptick. For example, we have members such as Cirrus Aircraft, as you know, that are continuing to grow, that continue to grow not only in the Duluth economy and the regional economy, but continue to contribute largely to the Minnesota economy. They, like many of our businesses up north, are doing well but struggle because they need more workforce. So something like this can help them not only bring more workforce north, but also have them come down to meetings in the Twin Cities and some of the things you've already heard from others. So you know the economic impact that this could have on our area, and we are so excited and so grateful for that. And that goes multiple ways. So you already heard some of the hospital connections as well. As you know, we've got nearly a $1 billion investment in our downtown right now with Essentia Health. They and our other members like St. Luke's are investing downtown Duluth, and we can help them by bringing more and more of their patients to them to give them better access with a train like this. So there are so many economic reasons this makes sense and why we are so proud to stand with so many people in this room. Other chambers of commerce in your packet, you have a letter of support not only from Duluth Chamber but also the Minneapolis Chamber and the Cambridge Chamber and others as well, because this makes so much economic sense. It also makes sense for, as we talked about, as Commissioner Nelson talked about, on a personal note, I'm also a combat veteran myself, and I see many of my fellow veterans who come down to the VA regularly. Something like this would make that so much more accessible for them as well as coming up. So talking about workforce and veterans, thinking of my friend who I also went to grad school with in UMD, at UMD, this would help bring more future workforce to our area as well in the form of college students to our great members like UMD, San Scholastica, Lake Superior College. It'd make it easier. I think of our class, and I think of more than half of our class members were from the Twin Cities area who commuted up to Duluth weekly, right? So something like this would only continue to grow those programs, grow the economy, grow the population in areas like Duluth. And, of course, I'm speaking from that perspective. I know others from the Twin Cities will see the benefit from Duluthians coming down as well. But from our perspective as Duluth Area Chamber, this would be great for business. This would be great for our workforce. This would be great for our economic development opportunities and our economy. And I believe wholeheartedly it would be good for the region, for the county, and for the entire state economy as well. So for that, that's why I'm proud to be here, and thank you for your support.
Thank you so much for your testimony.
And go Bulldogs.
And our next testifier is Hannah Zinn, and then Beth Johnson after that. Welcome to the committee, and please state your name for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you, Chair Hornstein, committee members. My name is Hannah Zinn, and I'm the Public Policy Manager for the Minneapolis Regional Chamber. I'm here to testify in support of House File 409, appropriating money to the Minneapolis to Duluth Intercity Passenger Rail, also known as the Northern Lights Express. The pending Northern Lights Express higher speed passenger rail project from Duluth to the Twin Cities is a golden opportunity to revitalize Minnesota's rail service, create thousands of good-paying jobs, and connect businesses and consumers throughout the state. Ever since pre-Civil War days, Minnesota's business community from Virginia to Duluth to the Twin Cities, Winona, Mankato, St. Cloud, Austin, Albert Lea, and everywhere in between has grown and prospered on the broad shoulders of our state's railroads. Railroad mergers, branch line abandonments, and most notably the car eroded those services. But things are changing all over the world. China and Europe have been building and using high-speed rail for a generation. Here in America, you can board a high-speed train from Washington, D.C. and be in New York in a little over 2 hours. Minnesota needs to catch up and get the Northern Lights Express ready to build. With the Northern Lights Express, the Twin Cities to Duluth trip becomes easy and affordable in just under 2.5 hours. Business people from the Iron Range in Duluth could travel quickly and efficiently year-round. Think of what that would mean for military veterans from across northeastern Minnesota visiting the Minneapolis VA Medical Center for treatment. It's a game changer for students, seniors, sports fans, those with disabilities, and folks looking for a weekend or a night out in the Twin Cities or Duluth. The economic benefits of the Northern Lights Express present a promising return on investment, with an estimated $15 million in state and local sales tax revenue expected in just the first year of operation, and an estimated $150 million increase to property values along the line. With supply chains under stress over the last year and a half, adding freight rail service would help aid in efficient logistic capabilities, improved speed and reliability of shipping lines. Job creation in a tight labor market would be a promising benefit to communities along the line who are currently struggling to find and retain talent. Over 3,000 jobs would be added to help improve and build upon rail lines and stations in Minneapolis, Coon Rapids, Cambridge, Hinckley, Superior, and Duluth. Employers along the rail line would also be able to attract new workers to their businesses who otherwise would not have the options to travel to these jobs. Benefits extend well beyond just employers and employees by impacting the greater communities. Lower carbon emissions due to a reduced number of cars going up and down Interstate 35 and Highway 65 by the thousands, and an increase in tourism and community building expected to bring new and diverse economic opportunities to Minnesotans across the state. The Minneapolis Regional Chamber is hopeful that policymakers will recognize the significant benefits that comes with enhanced rail transit like the Northern Lights Express and will act swiftly to make this years-long project a reality. Thank you for focusing on this issue, and I'm happy to answer any questions.
Thank you so much for your testimony.
I would also like to say thanks for supporting small businesses. I believe the donuts are from Bittner's Bakery this morning.
Yeah, and thank you to Vice Chair Tabke for that. Next, we have Beth Johnson and then Sean Stanek. Welcome to the committee, and please state your name for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Good morning. My name is Beth Johnson, and I work for the ARC Northland in Duluth, Minnesota. I am a program coordinator for the Arrowhead Regional Quality Council, and I'm here today to voice my support for the Northern Lights Express. As the program coordinator for the Arrowhead Regional Quality Council, I am continually tasked with monitoring and working to improve the quality of services for individuals with disabilities. In my work with the council, we have seen a significant gap in affordable and accessible transportation options for people with disabilities, limiting their ability to be independent and interact with their community and surrounding area. The Northern Lights Express could help fill this gap. This train could provide many opportunities and possibilities for individuals with disabilities and all people in the area. There are so many people who need this transportation option, whether it is a veteran who needs to get to appointments in the cities or an elderly adult who no longer drives but would love to attend a play at the Guthrie Theater, or someone flying out of the Minneapolis airport for a vacation, or a university student wanting to go to the cities for the weekend or vice versa, come up north. And most importantly, this would really help the access for people with disabilities. As you can see, I could go on and on to explain different scenarios on how helpful this train could be to a wide variety of individuals. And I have not even mentioned the economic and environmental impact of this train. I strongly urge you today to fund this project, as it could mean so many things to so many people. You have a chance to make it happen, and I hope you do so. Thank you for your time.
Thank you for your testimony, and like so many, thank you for making the trip down from Duluth.
Absolutely.
Next up is Sean here. Okay. Oh.
Another Bulldogs fan, Mr.
And Sean. Then we'll have Evan Vogel next. Welcome to our committee. Please state your name for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Good morning, folks. My name is Sean Stonex. I am a self-advocacy for Missoula. I am here to talk to you about the Northern Lights Express. I care about the Northern Lights Express train because some people don't drive and they must rely on public transportation. I am one of those people, and I live in the Duluth area. The public transportation to travel to the cities from Duluth are limited, especially people for disabilities. If we had the Northern Lights Express, I could travel to the cities for work, more opportunity, and to visit my folks. that's why we need the non-light express. And thank you for your time and listening to me.
Thank you very much for your testimony. And again, thank you for making the trip down from Duluth.
Thank you.
Next, we have Evan Vogel, and followed by Janet Kennedy, and then Andrew Johnson after that. Welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you, Chair Hornstein and committee members. My name is Evan Vogel, and I'm the city administrator for the City of Cambridge. First off, I'd like to thank Chair Hornstein and the committee for hearing this proposed legislation and to the bill authors for moving it forward. In 2022, the Cambridge City Council voted unanimously on a resolution to support the Northern Lights Express project and asks for your support as this legislation moves forward. House File 409 presents an opportunity to leverage state assets to access significant federal dollars for an innovative commuter passenger rail project here in Minnesota. The City of Cambridge is slated to be the second stop north between Minneapolis and Duluth, and I'm honored to have the opportunity to be here to explain how I believe this project would benefit the City of Cambridge and the surrounding area. This rail line would undoubtedly benefit state tourism and provide more environmentally friendly modes of transportation, but that said, it's the day-to-day commuter implications that I'm most excited about. Area residents would be able to park at the station in Cambridge and get to Minneapolis in approximately 45 minutes. This train would provide residents of Cambridge and the surrounding area the opportunity to live in Greater Minnesota, which may better suit their lifestyle and sensibilities, while providing regular and reliable transportation with a reasonable commute to work in the metro area on a daily basis. Additionally, the City of Cambridge has seen several large changes with increased commercial and manufacturing businesses, as well as an announcement from Allina Health that it will be building a new state-of-the-art hospital and clinic. NLX would provide these employers a wider pool of potential employees and provide others access to these employment opportunities within our city. The project would also benefit veterans, who would have better access to the Minneapolis VA, to seniors and to people with disabilities, as well as students who may be unable to drive or may not have access to other modes of transportation. At its core, this project provides three things: opportunity, equity, and reliability. It provides opportunities for any passenger who may use the train for commute, tourism, or recreation. It provides the opportunity for each community along the stop or along the way and the surrounding communities to embrace the state-of-the-art amenity for residents and tourists. And here in Cambridge, we would use the opportunity to collaborate with regional bus lines as well as options for rental bicycles, scooters, and cars to connect users to transportation throughout the region. And it provides equity by enabling those with limited access to transportation or those needing access to services with a more reliable transportation option. It also provides reliability by running on established track on an established schedule connected to a network of other mass transit options. Given the availability of federal funding, now seems like the time to act. This project would provide tremendous benefit to my region and to the state at large. I appreciate the opportunity to testify, and I encourage all members to continue to support House File 409. Thank you.
Thank you so much for your testimony. And next we have Janet Kennedy, who's the City Council President in Duluth. And following that, we have the Ward 12 Council Member in Minneapolis, Andrew Johnson.
Good morning, everyone.
Good morning. Thank you for making the trip down. Welcome to the Transportation Committee.
Thank you,
Please Chair. State your name for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you, Chair Hornstein and representatives. My name is Janet Kennedy, and I serve in the City of Duluth as a City Council President. I'm serving the 5th District. It's actually where part of the train will go, so I'm really excited to be here and talk about that. So I'm here to support HF 409. I'm here on behalf of the City Council of Duluth and Mayor Larson, who couldn't make it today. So the NLX is very important. It will leverage $320 million in funds from the federal government for intercity passenger rail. $16 million was included for the intercity passenger rail in the federal bipartisan infrastructure bill passed in 2021 by Congress. The federal money will go to rail projects across the county. Why not Minnesota? Why not Duluth? I will just tell you, I drove up from Duluth, and I come in frequently because I am training and a real estate development institute, and I'm here driving twice a month. I've been here through the snow the last couple times, and I can tell you, even today when I had to leave early because I had to care for my mom, it would have been nice to have the train. I could be doing a lot of my work, training on the next phase of my life, how do we build our communities. So it's so important. NLX is the most shovel-ready project in the country, according to Amtrak. It's shovel-ready because the work completed received a green light from the federal government to move into the final construction phase. The $14 million invested to date in local, state, and federal funds make this project eagerly anticipated by many, and hopefully all of you. 300,000 construction jobs will be created. The Minnesota Building and Construction Trades Council and Duluth Building Trades Council support this project. As there's the International Brother of Electrical Workers, IBEW, Brotherhood of Locomotive Engineers, BLET, and Smart TD Transportation Union. This is also why business supports the project, including the Minneapolis Area Chamber of Commerce, Duluth Chamber of Commerce, and Anoka Chamber of Commerce. The entire amount of requested state funds will cover safety improvements for 166 grade crossings on 152 miles of existing tracks from urban cores to rural areas, bringing geographic equity to this proposal, which is really, really important, as we've heard. Freight benefits will be immediate with the correction of the choke points in today's commercial rail network, like the Grassy Point Bridge in my district, in the St. Louis River of Duluth. NLX is about choice, where you live, work, play, and have access to vital health care and other services is so vitally important. The train will connect veterans, seniors, students, families, and remote workers, bringing them to the places they want to go. NLX is green. It's sustainable transportation that will help reach the state goal of reducing vehicle miles traveled 20% by 2050. The emission savings and CO2 reductions will improve air quality across the state. A return on investment analysis shows that there will be a positive return on investments to the state and local communities thanks to the growth in the economy. NLX will connect veterans from northern Minnesota and northern Wisconsin to the VA hospital in Minneapolis. NLX will be an option for those with mobility issues and those who cannot or choose not to drive. The train is different from the last. This train is different from the last Amtrak train. First, it will just take over 2 hours to run, and it's a much higher speed. The old train track took nearly 4 hours. I never traveled on that one. I'm not sure if any of you have in this room. With the advent of the internet, laptop computers, cellular phones, this train turns windshield time into productive time work for commuters like myself, which I wished I would have had today. And I want to thank Aaron Cagle. You're a UMD graduate, I hear. Nice to meet you. I didn't go to UMD, but that's okay. I support it. You probably did. We'll talk later. Maybe a family there still.
Oh, okay. Maybe.
I won't do my stump speech, but I am running this year. So, thank you for introducing the legislation to help leverage the millions of dollars in federal funding to build this train. We ask for your support, everyone here today, representatives, as well as thank you for your steadfast support of the Northern Lights Express. And I believe we can make this happen, so thank you for letting me speak today.
Thank you so much. And thank you for your service on the council.
Thank you.
And speaking of the city council, we have Andrew Johnson, a council member from Ward 12 in the city of Minneapolis. Welcome to the committee, and also serves, still believe, as the public works chair. Is that correct?
That's correct.
So here we go. Thank you. And you've been a longtime supporter of this.
Yes.
So thank you. Welcome. And please state your name for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Certainly. My name is Andrew Johnson. Thank you, Chair Hornstein. Thank you, committee members. Thank you, Representative Cagle, for your authorship of this. So I am the chair of the Northern Lights Express Alliance. I'm the chair of Intergovernmental Relations for the City of Minneapolis and the chair of Minneapolis's Public Works and Infrastructure Committee. And I am here today to express the City of Minneapolis's strong support for this project, a statewide asset. What you have heard today is broad support up and down the line from cities, counties, businesses, and organizations. The Northern Lights Express has broad public support. In surveys conducted along the corridor, 88% of the public support this project. And there is a broad support of different riders that you've heard of, from veterans, students, tourists, workers, hospital patients, and so on. If this project is funded, 750,000 riders in the first year will be able to take advantage of this asset, and quickly ramping up to more than 1 million riders a year. There are $400 million in federal funds that we can secure and bring to Minnesota with this bill, and they're waiting for us. As you've heard, this is a top priority nationally as part of the rail system for our nation. And these crossing upgrades up and down the line are likely to save lives, and the investments will improve commerce across the state of Minnesota. This project will create over 700 permanent jobs, and in tourism alone, more than $400 million of economic activity. This is the most environmentally friendly form of transit as well. And I just want to share with you my personal testimony on two experiences. First, when we talk about tourism, we think a lot about folks in Minnesota going between Minneapolis and Duluth and in between. But my wife and I, she actually is more athletic than I am, and she signed up for a race out in Portland, Maine. And so we had to figure out how to get out there. And we could have flown into Boston and then waited at the airport and done a connection to fly up to Portland, but it's not a good experience doing that, as we all know. It's not fun to travel through the airports. And so we ended up taking the Downeaster from Boston up to Portland. It was much more comfortable. We enjoyed the ride. But most importantly, we spent extra time in that state. We spent an extra night in Boston, spent the time enjoying the trip. And so we think a lot about ourselves going up to Duluth or coming down to Minneapolis, but this truly is a draw nationally. And you think of things like Grandma's Marathon or our incredible crown jewels of park systems or the Superior Hiking Trail or Lutzen. There are lots of opportunities to draw people in from outside the state to spend their money right here in Minnesota. And then I want to share with you my experience recently of going to Duluth as a driver, because that's mainly what I do, is I drive. And I was coming back in the evening, and I forget about this as somebody who lives in the metro, but there's actually not a lot of lights along 35W. And so I was coming back at night from a retirement party, and it was snowing just lightly, and the headlights are hitting that snow. Committee members, I could not really see the road. And it's awful. I'm white knuckling my steering wheel, my face pressed up to the windshield, just praying my car is somewhere on 35W and I'm not going off into a ditch. It was awful, and it is a lasting memory the next time I think of going up to Duluth and coming back. And what I'm trying to tell you with this is 10 out of 10 times, I'm going to be taking NLX. It's comfortable. I can work. If I don't have work, I can watch Netflix, or I can just look out the window and enjoy the ride. I can do so safely, reliably, and that's what I'm going to do every single time. And there are so many Minnesotans just like me thinking the same exact thing, and they're going to more frequently come in between these two economic powerhouses of our state and all the way in between. So, committee members, I would ask you, please join the broad coalition all across the community, all across this corridor, within the public, in supporting this project. Thank you for your time.
Thank you so much, council member. Thank you for all your work on this.
We have two more testifiers, and I'm going to ask the two remaining testifiers to keep within the two-minute guideline here because we have three amendments and committee discussion that we need to get to. So Ken Bueller and then Bryce Reisner will be our final testifier. Welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Good morning, everyone, and thank you, Mr. Chairman, members, and Representative Cagle. I will keep to the 2 minutes. My name is Ken Bueller. I am chair of the Technical Advisory Committee to the Northern Lights Express Joint Powers Board. I'm also the executive director at the Lake Superior Railroad Museum and general manager of the North Shore Scenic Railroad in Duluth. Bob Manzaline, the NLX executive director, and Greg Mathis, who is with the Minnesota Department of Transportation, will be here also to answer any questions you might have. I want to thank the representatives and staff for their time today, and also thank those who took the time to testify about the importance of returning passenger rail between Minneapolis and Duluth Superior. This is my short Build It Now speech. In the time it takes, on a good day, to drive from here to Duluth Superior, 2 hours and 25 minutes, you can take the train. But unlike your car, where you get windshield time, you can make the trip productive time on your laptop, personal device, or cell phone. Or you can just relax instead and not have to deal with freeway congestion and gridlock and weather. Your ride will be almost carbonless. Trains have the lowest carbon footprint per passenger mile than any form of transportation other than ferry boats. And I don't think it's likely we're going to get a ferry boat between Duluth and Minneapolis. Northern Lights Express will run on existing low-density tracks owned by BNSF. Amtrak runs on BNSF trackage all over the country. They have the existing agreements for usage that date back to inception of Amtrak in 1970. There is $16 billion of federal money already allocated to projects specifically like NLX. But unlike similar intercity passenger rail initiatives that are just getting started, NLX has a finding of no significant impact from the Federal Railroad Administration. That means this is shovel-ready. Will NLX be successful? Yes, and here is the proof. Over the past several years before the pandemic, Amtrak's fastest-growing passenger train was the Downeaster we just heard about, regularly racking up double-digit increases in ridership every single year. The Downeaster connects Boston with tourist destinations in Maine over a distance of 150 miles. Sound familiar? A large metropolitan area on the south end of the line with many major industry and business headquarters, all the attractions of major league sporting teams, fine restaurants, arts and culture venues, and people. Lots and lots of people. Connected to northern communities that offer recreation, wilderness, experiences, and also offer, by the way, fine dining, arts and culture, and access to the greatest and largest body of fresh water on the planet Earth, Lake Superior. Now, with all projects, we've heard some criticism. There have been questions about passenger safety in light of similar concerns about light rail. NLX is an Amtrak intercity passenger service where a conductor checks tickets at boarding and rides on the train the entire route to ensure safe travel for all. Passenger trains are safe. They employ the latest in positive train control that safely shows dispatchers and engineers what is ahead and behind them on the line. In light of the effects of the pandemic has had on commuter train travel, there have been ridership concerns. NLX, again, is an intercity train where average fare box recovery is 2, 3, and sometimes 4 times higher than commuter trains or light rail. And almost every Amtrak route has recovered to pre-pandemic levels. Summing up, this is a transportation alternative that works everywhere in the world for millions and millions of people every single day. And we are no different. As our population ages, as millennials and Generation Zers show less interest in owning cars and driving, and because lowering our carbon footprint is becoming even more critical, a train between the Twin Cities and the Twin Ports makes more and more sense. The funding is there, the ridership is there, the reasons make sense, and this is the time to build it now. Because the Northern Lights Express is a train that will change everything.
Thank you so much. Really appreciate your testimony. And our last testifier is Bryce Reisner, and then we're going to move quickly into committee discussion, questions, and amendments. And again, I'm just going to emphasize the need for a two-minute testimony.
You got it.
Welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you, Chair and members of the committee. My name is Bryce Reisner, and I am here to tell you that public transit is apolitical. I have always believed that the low-cost, energy-efficient trains that will one day run across America will be a staple of all cross-country trips that today are taken in cramped, polluting cars. But I always figured that this dream was in the distant future, some 30 years away. Until I overheard a phone call from my roommate that he made to his friends back in Wisconsin. For you see, my roommate is a staunch conservative, and he and I agree on almost nothing. But the one thing we both agree on is that trains are so comfortable. During his phone call, he tried to convince his friends to come to visit, but they said they didn't want to drive all the way. And so he tells them about Amtrak. Now I will read a quote from that conversation. Bro, no, it only costs $50. You'd spend that much on gas. Uh-huh. No, like, on a train, you can eat and move around. And this information thrilled me. Here is a man who I could not have less in common with, arguing for his friends to ride the rails because they are an apolitical cause. Everybody would love to be able to get around on public transit, and not just my roommate. I took a quick poll of students at the University of Minnesota, and a whopping 66% of respondents who had an interest in traveling to Duluth would pay for a $35 train ride ticket to go there. Imagine if two-thirds of traffic up to Duluth vanished. Life would be so much better for the people who drive and the people who do not drive. And having more options to get around is the most American sentiment I could have ever thought of. Instead of putting freedom at the price of a car from a dealership, instead we can make it affordable to all by way of transit. Because freedom is apolitical, and the Northern Lights Express would make life better for everyone. Thank you.
Thanks so much for your testimony and for coming down today. Okay, members, we have some opportunity now for questions of the author, of any of the testifiers. Do we have questions? Okay.
Are we going to do amendments first? Or
well, I think if you have questions of any of the people that have testified or the author, we can take those now and then we'll do amendments.
Thank you.
So I'll have Representative Petersburg and then Representative Hudella.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I would like the testifier from Amtrak if he'd come down for a minute.
Mr. Cuevas? Representative Petersburg.
Thank you, and thank you, Mr. Chair, and Mr. Cuevas, because you're probably one of the few people around here that probably actually have some insight, information or insight into how this actually would operate. I would like to know, it looks like from the information I have, that the project would include 8 passes, 4 round trips, at 2.5 hours apiece, which runs about 20 hours of track time over that period of time. Is that track and Amtrak and BNSF worked out that prospect to know that? Because I think it's only a single track from there down to here.
Thank you for the question, Mr. Cuevas.
Representative, I appreciate the question. My understanding is that and this is where I was trying to figure out if it's BNSF. And what I have here is it's CP, but I have to. I can.
It could be, but in either case.
Yeah, but I can look up who's specifically. But I do understand that when Amtrak is going to work on any new service, we have to make those agreements with the host railroad. So. I can get back to you with that answer specifically because in my notes I have CP, but I don't want to, not answer that correctly.
Okay.
Petersburg.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I think that's important. Unfortunately, we're going to take it out of committee today. So any information you can get us into the future, I think, would be helpful because if it goes into the omnibus bill, we'll have more time to talk about it.
Yeah, we're holding it in committee.
Right. Just because it's important for us to know, we've heard that this is very shovel-ready, yet without having talked to the railroad companies and others, I think we're a long way from being shovel-ready. And certainly we have the funding available if we approve through this.
In my notes what I have is that for CP, it is that we've already talked to them. CP is one of our best railroads in terms of the 7 class ones that we operate with. And actually, we issue a railroad report card to Congress, and CP has been a top performer in the past 5 years. And because of that, their trains have been about 95% on time. So,
Mr. Griffiths, I think we have someone else that could clarify this. Okay. We may have a difference on the great host. So, welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record and
Mr. Chair, Bob Manzoline with the St. Louis and Lee County Rail Authority. Been involved in the project for the past 20 years and can answer some of these questions, I think, a bit more than our Amtrak person who just came in from Chicago, I think, this morning.
Okay.
But anyway, the track is owned by BNSF Railroad. They operate totally on their track from Minneapolis to Duluth. BNSF has been involved in the project since almost its inception when we got into the study phase and the modeling of the railroad. They've been involved since day one of when we started putting the project together. They're very much aware of the proposed improvements the project would intend to make on their track. The improvements are pretty much twofold. One involves safety, and the other involves track improvements to operate at higher speeds, which they're also very much aware of. So I'm not sure if that answers your question.
Follow-up, Representative Petersburg.
Thank you, because I think I talked to Ms. Witt from Department of Transportation yesterday, and she was unaware that there were a lot of discussions between BNSF in regards to this final project, and so they weren't aware, she wasn't aware of any improvements or whatever might be needed yet when and if this should come forward. So whereas I'm sure there has been some preliminary discussions, has there been any kind of agreements or decisions made on what might be necessary to improve the track and move forward?
Mr. Chair, Representative, we've gotten to the point, I think, with any railroad where before they invest the time and effort into getting into that amount of detail, and there'll be a lot of detail in the agreements with Amtrak's agreements and so forth, they need to know a project's going to happen. Across the country, people have great ideas about rail service and so forth, but until the money is on the table and they know this is moving ahead, they're not going to invest a lot of time in it.
Thank you. One more question from Representative Petersburg, and then we'll move to Representative.
Yeah, because I think you have the answer. When we add passenger rail to a track, does that require positive train control process on that track in order for safety?
Mr. Chair and Representative, yes. And I can just make more of a general statement about the cost of this track improvement. Not quite half the money is going to make the track safer. We're increasing safety at all the crossings, positive train controls. They all cost a lot of money. The other major component is just operating at a higher speed. Right now, the freight traffic is operating between 40 and 50 miles an hour. We want to ramp it up to 90. And it will not affect the freight traffic as it exists today. And we're just moved ahead with BNSF on all those fronts, and they very much understand it.
Thank you. Representative Hudella, and then we'll start the taking amendments.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Question for Amtrak. Do you know what the national average is for fare box recovery on the Amtrak lines? Or maybe the author knows.
Anyone on the panel want to take that one? Mr. Cuevas.
Chairman and Representative, my understanding is that depends on if it's long distance or state-supported service. In Amtrak, we have two kind of ways that we separate how we discuss recovery. So, for example, long distance is the Empire Builder, Chicago goes all the way to Seattle, versus, for example, Chicago to Hiawatha, which is state-supported Chicago to Milwaukee. And so the fare recovery for those types of, for the state supporter, have generally been higher than the long distance because it's much more frequent. We work with states and the host railroads on working on timetables that work for the customer.
Representative Hudella.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just follow up. So 36% or 36% sound like a national average number that's been published in the past.
Mr. Cuevas.
Chairman, Representative, yes, that sounds about right. But I can also give you that information afterwards.
Thank you.
Thank you for your question. And then we'll have Representative Murphy next.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Representative Cagle. My question, or a little bit of a comment, we talked about the 750,000 annual riders, and a couple of the testifiers talked about their routes from Milwaukee to Chicago, Washington, D.C. to New York City. In the area that we're going to, the largest city, Duluth, has about 87,000 people in it. How did you come up with the 750,000 riders?
Mr. Chair, Representative, this is was arrived at by a lot of study, and a lot of folks that are at the national level can pull apart these ridership numbers much better than I can. But we had a company called Cambridge Systematics come in, who's done this across the country, to evaluate the business travelers, the vacation travelers. The surveys were done. We actually used cell phones to track how people are traveling along the corridor. That was one component of it. But it goes into a lot of detail on how they arrive at those ridership numbers. The ridership went under a peer review. They brought in folks from around the country to take a look at Cambridge Systematics' work on this. Their work's been evaluated also by the Federal Railroad Administration, who doesn't take this lightly. They took a look at the work, and they actually was using Minnesota as an example of how these types of projects should be put together. Minnesota got a great accommodation in their passenger rail office on the work they did for evaluating the ridership and their work with the railroads.
Follow-up, Representative Whitney?
Yeah, Mr. Chair. Is that some areas we've had some big problems with, mm-hmm. COVID, in terms of ridership and the public safety, just the riders going back and forth. Were these numbers prior to COVID? Is that when most of these numbers were taken?
Mr. Chair and Representative, yes, they were. 2017 was the final of the work, completion of the work.
Yeah, I guess my only comment is, this is a huge expense for, you know, Minnesota in general, and just want to make sure we have the riders, so we're not subsidizing it. So that's a really important number. So
thank you for the question.
Thank you.
Okay, members, I think we're ready to move on. Oh, Mr. Cuevas, very briefly.
Just wanted to, Chairman and Representative, just wanted to follow up in terms of the ridership. If I may, I'm going to bring up the example of Missouri. They have the Missouri River Runner that runs between Kansas City and St. Louis, and it runs twice a day, and it actually lost some funding. It was only once a day round trip, and legislators across the aisles in the rural and suburban areas were advocating to reinstate the second round trip because they saw the economic downturn in their cities and their towns. So from that example, I'm more than happy to give you more information about that. And for the record, I just want to clarify, I made a mistake. When I was looking at my information sheet, it's CP is for TCMC.
Yes,
for,
I was.
So my apologies earlier.
Deduce that. Okay, yeah. Members, yeah. Are you good?
Yeah, the only thing, just in the size of the cities between, you know, those markets, that's why I'm wondering if that ridership can actually deliver like we're saying it's going to. Thank you.
Thank you. Chair Cagle, a quick comment, and then we'll move to amendments.
Yeah, Mr. Chair and Representative, the Twin Ports area has almost nearly 300,000 people in that area. So when we're looking at the Twin Ports, it is kind of a metropolitan area, Hermantown, Superior, Proctor, all those fun suburbs of Duluth.
Thank you for the clarification. A5 amendment. Do we have a motion for that? Representative Petersburg moves the A5.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. I do move the A5, and I hope the language is there. Since we approved the underlying amendment already, it's no longer in front of us. I hope this still is correct language. All three of the amendments that I'm bringing forward are not intended to eliminate the program or put any stops into it, but rather, if we've learned nothing more from the issues that have developed with Southwest Light Rail, is that we didn't put in enough stop gaps in order for us to, for the legislature to kind of be cognizant of what's happening with it. I think it's always a situation where we, if we leave an open-ended checkbook or credit card, there isn't the follow-up and connection with those of us that are having to pay for it through the legislature. And so all regional programs that we have done, the state needs to have some responsibility into it. So I'm not trying to eliminate that, but instead I believe that we have a fiduciary responsibility to at least be aware of what we are committing the state to in regards to some of these projects, which are very much in the preliminary stages, but we're committing ourselves to it. And so these three amendments are just a way for us to put in a trigger that says to those that are developing the projects and whatever, saying, hey, we're getting close to that and we aren't going to be able to follow through. We better start thinking about where do we go? Where can we get the funding, et cetera? Because if we don't do that, they're going to wait till at the very end. So this is a really an opportunity for that. So really, the first A5 just says that the appropriation that is in the amended bill now just limits and guarantees that the commissioner will not expend any more than the $194,300,000 from state sources for capital costs involved with that. And some might say, well, but that's it, what it says it appropriates. That's true. However, Department of Transportation and Regional Authority through the state has other sources that they could spend to it as well. This simply says, if you need more than that, you need to come to us or find other sources besides that. And Mr. Chair, I've talked to Chair Cagle about this. I don't think you're going to accept any of these amendments, but I would like to have a roll call for it as well.
Roll call has been requested and granted. Representative Cagle, a response to Representative Petersburg's A5 amendment.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members. One thing that the track, 13% of it is in Wisconsin, but that's not in these costs. And so any of that money coming from Wisconsin then would be considered part of the contingency, which is not included in the 194.3. So I kind of worry about that specific number. And Representative Petersburg and I had a really good conversation last night after a session about kind of the intent of these of all of the amendments. And so I really do understand that, you know, where the intent is. And I want to work with Representative Petersburg and to make sure that we kind of address some of these transparency and accountability issues. And so actually I was looking a little bit on some of the policy around kind of the influx of money that we're getting. And with that, through, and I don't know if this gives you much confidence at all, Representative Petersburg, but through the federal government, they have been, they did do some critical policy reforms around these new programs as well. So they kind of, they have a composition of Amtrak, or they have increased oversight changes to Amtrak's long distance routes, improved oversight of Amtrak spending, are just some of the key passenger experience enhancements, protecting Amtrak routes through rural communities. So there's a number of things that that the federal government has done to kind of address some of these, but I'm definitely willing to work with you as far as finding what kind of state solutions we can do as well. So I'm recommending a no vote.
The author recommends a no vote. We'll give, and I appreciate your interest in further conversations with Lead Petersburg. But we will give Lead Petersburg the last word before we take the roll call vote.
Thank you, and I appreciate that, and thank you, Representative Cagle, for doing some of the research. It sounds like almost all of that is through oversight and operating costs of Amtrak, where this particular amendment and the next one actually deals with the construction, which is prior to that piece of it. And that is where we're getting into trouble with Southwest Right Rail, in fact, is in the actual construction of itself. So just food for thought, and thank you, Mr. Chair.
Okay, roll call has been requested, and Mr. Petrie will take the roll.
Hornstein.
No.
Hornstein, no. Tapke.
Nope.
Tapke, no. Petersburg.
Yes.
Petersburg, yes. Brand excused. Elkins.
No.
Elkins, no. Fogelman excused. Hudella.
Yes.
Hudella, yes. Cagle.
No.
Cagle, no. Kraft.
No.
Kraft, no. Murphy.
Yes.
Murphy, yes. Nelson.
No.
Nelson, no. Norris.
No.
Norris, no. Olson excused. Censor Mira.
No.
Censor Mira, no. West excused. And Mr. Chair, we have 3 ayes and 8 nays.
There being 3 ayes and 8 nays, the motion does not prevail. The A6 amendment, is that also yours, Representative Petersburg?
It is, Mr. Chair, and I would move the A6 amendment, which is very similar to the other, only this deals with the entire project and rather than just the appropriated amount, limiting our exposure as a state, our fiduciary responsibility, at $500 million for the combined state and federal sources. That includes federal sources. Again, just trying to figure out some way for us to have an opportunity to know when we're getting close to that level and we're not close to finishing it, because without that, we're going to find ourselves in very same situation as we are with Southwest Light Rail if we don't have something like this. So, Mr. Chair, I would recommend a yes vote, and I would like a roll call.
Thank you. A roll call requested and granted. We'll have Representative Murphy and then a response from the author.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just have to support both of these. I think we want to be careful. I mean, we saw how excited our testifier, Mr. Reisner, was. But we don't want to surprise him in 20 years and say, what the heck were you guys thinking? Why don't you take some safeguards for us so we know better? I rode that train in the late 70s. It was cool. But we do need to protect our taxpayers, too. We're actually kind of on a runaway train here a little bit, so we have to be careful. So I wish we'd look closely at some of these things. They're not killing the bill. They're just trying to make it a little bit better so we can protect the taxpayers, especially outstate taxpayers like Otter Tail and Douglas County. So thank you.
Thank you, Representative Murphy. Chair Cagle.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And maybe just kind of some of the policy, again, that they enacted at the federal level. They do, in the approved oversight of Amtrak spending, it does categorize and identify amount of funds each service type receives and spends on operating expenses, debt services, capital expenses, and contingency levels. And then it also describes operations, service programs. So, and then also looking at just the core capital costs, so the state shares can be $109 million, but that is leveraging $435. So if you guys, this fiscal summary is in your packets, but that is leveraging $435 million. And so just even the estimates of the total capital project cost is $544 million. And so, the $500 million number is a bit problematic, and so I would suggest a no vote.
Thank you, Representative Petersburg.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So would you be interested in covering this if we were to do an oral amendment to change the amount?
We can talk about it, and towards Mr. Chair, we can continue to discuss it once we move towards the final
bill. My sense is we may see these amendments again in a couple of weeks.
How about an extra donut? No.
You just gave away his donuts?
I like the collaborative.
Point of order.
I like the collaborative spirit of this committee, but I hope that it seems like there may be some room for discussion, negotiation, and as I mentioned before, this bill's being laid over, and the last week of March we'll be revisiting this. But last word, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm just trying to help out in actually putting a stopgap method here, because otherwise we could find ourselves in serious additional costs to this without any controls. And we have heard often, and some of the questions I've asked, we just don't have the answers yet. Some of the projections and so forth, I have no confidence in. 750,000 riders, we're talking about the next bill. But I would just say, please vote yes. And thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Lead Petersburg. And we now have a roll call pending. Mr. Petrie.
Hornstein.
No.
Hornstein, no. Tabke.
No.
Tabke, no. Petersburg.
Yes.
Petersburg, yes. Brand excused. Elkins.
No.
Elkins, no. Fogelman excused. Hudella.
Yes.
Hudella, yes. Cagle.
No.
Cagle, no. Kraft.
No.
Kraft, no. Murphy.
Yes.
Murphy, yes. Nelson.
No.
Nelson, no. Norris.
No.
Norris, no. Olson excused. Censor Mira.
No.
Censor Mira, no. West excused. And Mr. Chair, we have 3 ayes and 8 nays.
There being 3 ayes and 8 nays, the motion does not prevail. Our last amendment of the morning is the A7 amendment. Also yours, Representative Petersburg?
Yes, Mr. Chair, and I would like to move the A7 amendment, and I'd last a roll call on that as well.
Roll call is granted. Proceed with your amendment.
This amendment actually deals with probably the one area that we have the least confidence in, and that is the subsidy and operating costs of the railroad, I mean, of this particular track. What I've heard is 750,000 riders a year, and when I talked to Department of Transportation yesterday, they said they were projecting a $26 fare one way for it, and that we're hearing that the operating costs could run as high as $18.9 million. 750,000 rides at $26 is $18,750,000. Seems to me that covers the entire operating cost. Yet we heard from Amtrak saying that the fare box recovery is only about 36% nationwide. Even if we were to double that to 70%, that still indicates that maybe this rider number isn't right or something isn't right. And so the annual subsidy that was projected was somewhere between $3 and $5 million. And if we want to change that amount, we can on this amendment. But this just says that in the future, the commissioner must not expend more than $3 million in each fiscal year from state sources for operating and ongoing maintenance, which seems to be realistic for us to do that. And so again, this is an opportunity for us to make sure we limit the exposure that the state has in funding something that we at this time don't have any possible understanding of. Doesn't mean that a future legislature can't fix that and change it, but at least we know that into the future we're committing this legislature and appropriations for that. And so, Mr. Chair, I would request a yes vote.
Thank you. Roll call has been requested and granted. Any additional discussion? We'll have Chair Cagle respond.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and it's kind of, you know, same argument for all three of the amendments. And so what I really just want to commit that we can continue working on this. I understand where you're coming from. I know the intention's good, and so we can definitely, you know, continue to have conversations about how we can make sure to put the guardrails up for the state of Minnesota.
Thank you. Representative Petersburg.
Thank you, and I appreciate that, and I know that we will, and Mr. Chair, you'll be involved with this too, so thank you for that, but I still think this is the best way to go, so please vote yes.
Thank you, and Mr. Petrie.
Hornstein.
No.
Hornstein, no. Tabke.
Nope.
Tabke, no. Petersburg.
Yes.
Petersburg, yes. Brand excused. Elkins.
No.
Elkins, no. Fogelman excused. Hudella.
Yes.
Hudella, yes. Cagle.
No.
Cagle, no. Kraft.
No.
Kraft, no. Murphy.
Yes.
Murphy, yes. Nelson.
No.
Nelson, no. Norris.
No.
Norris, no. Olson excused. Censor Mira. No. Censor Mira, no. West excused. Mr. Chair, we have 3 ayes and 8 nays.
There being 3 ayes and 8 nays, the motion does not prevail. Members, that concludes our discussion of amendments. We have a couple more minutes if there's anyone else wants to make a final point. If not, we'll have the chair.
Mr. Chair.
Oh, Representative Petersburg.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'll be extremely brief. I think that whenever we talk about helping people with transit and stuff throughout, that's an important piece, and it's something that we don't and shouldn't underplay. However, we need to start eventually talking about the subsidy for all of that transit, because that in itself sucks up more and more dollars from a shrinking funding source that we just don't have until we decide that. Because we talk about productivity of those that don't have to have windshield time, but that productivity is at the expense of others that are subsidizing their ride, okay? And so to help it explain, if you have a fare box recovery of 25%, for example, that means for your ride, 3 other people have to pay for the extra amount. And that's important for us to keep that in mind, because eventually as that grows and grows and grows, more and more dollars have to come from somewhere. And that's the somewhere that we're gonna eventually have to struggle with. And that's the challenge. So as we move forward with this, I just wanted to keep in mind that if we don't do something to start curtailing the costs of these subsidies, eventually we're gonna run out of money. So thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you for your comments, Representative Petersburg. Representative Hudella? and we have many people. I'm going to really ask folks to keep it brief, but obviously it's everyone's prerogative to have a couple comments. This is a very big and very important bill. Representative Della.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Members, I love Duluth. I love the North Shore. I go up there 6 to 8 times a year during the summertime. But this project screams Southwest Light Rail 2.0. It really does. And we've heard how Fed policy is going to save us if we get into trouble. It's done nothing on our Southwest Light Rail. So lots of concerns. We talked about the fare box issue. I get the sense that nobody really knows the price tag of this yet, and that's very concerning. But I want to address a couple other things. We heard, hey, we need this for the veteran community multiple times during testimony. There's a VA clinic right across the bridge in Superior, Wisconsin. And I'd be really interested to see data on how many veterans, because that's an issue I'm very passionate about, how many actually come down to Minneapolis. The other thing we heard was, well, people will take this train to commute down to the Twin Cities to work. It's the same drive time, essentially. Who is going to spend 4.5 to 5 hours of time on a train plus that work day to get a job down in Minneapolis? And I think for maybe an incredibly high-paying job, maybe, but my hunch is those folks probably aren't going to take a train down to commute. So just so many concerns and so many parallels with the Southwest Light Rail project. It kind of makes sense to me now with the cannabis bill coming, because I think it's going to take a lot of that product to understand a lot of the facts and figures with this bill, in my opinion. So thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Representative Padilla. We have Representative Nelson, Representative Kraft, Representative Elkins, and then we'll take, we're not going to take a vote, but we'll adjourn at that point. Representative Nelson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. I just want to remind us that when we keep talking about or the subsidies we do to transit of all methods, we also subsidize our roads with property taxes that other people are having to pay for us to enjoy that pleasure, many of them that don't drive. And so we just got to keep remembering that, and that's one of the things that keeps getting thrown at transit is the subsidies, but we also subsidize the roads at an equal or even greater amount.
Thank you, Representative Nelson, and, well, Chair this. Representative Kraft.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Representative Cable, for bringing this. Some of my comments were going to be exactly what Representative Nelson said, so it can narrow mine down. I do also want to point out that we do have a very car-oriented society, and that's going to remain that way, but we put up with a lot because of that, including that it's 17 times more likely to die while traveling by car than traveling by train. There are in 2020, 394 deaths in Minnesota by car. Trains average about 8 deaths per year. And there's 3,000 deaths per year in Minnesota from air pollution, which has a significant impact by cars. So there's a lot we put up with from being a car-oriented society. And so I think when we're talking about the subsidies, things, we need to think a little bit more broadly about this. So thank you for bringing this, Representative Cake.
Thank you, Representative Kraft. We will hear next from Representative Elkins, and I believe Representative Brand and Representative Tapke. Representative Elkins.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I was going to say pretty much the same thing that Representative Nelson, or Chair Nelson, said as well, is that right now over half of our road and bridge money is coming from property taxes, not gas taxes. Gas taxes provide about the same amount of funding for roads and bridges that fares do for rail transit, and we need to eliminate that cross subsidy as well. If we're going to focus on one, we need to focus on both. The gas tax is just not carrying its weight right now. I do want to say make some comments just about the issues with managing rail projects. Is it, you know, at each step of the way, the project is divided into discrete steps, planning, engineering, and there are checkpoints throughout the process. And one thing that we might want to look at is Representative Petersburg and Chair Cagle are talking is you know, perhaps periodic reports at these checkpoints as to, you know, where the project sits in terms of projected expenditures. Early in the project, there will be a large contingency budget, and as you get through the process and you're, you know, farther along, no more, that the contingency part usually shrinks. But maybe perhaps build something in that says at each checkpoint, check in with us and let us know how things are going.
It sounds like we have some ideas around some of these amendments. Yeah. So
one of the things that's been vexing for us on Southwest is that, and you remember, this is the first one that really has gone seriously over budget. The Blue Line and the Green Line originally, those two projects came in on time and under budget. And we got into trouble with this one because we included tunnels in the design, and the geotechnic engineering didn't identify the true nature of the risks. So one lesson is don't build tunnels into your design.
All right. Well, thank you for that. Very quickly, Representative Brand, I think Representative Tabkes was more of an announcement. So we'll go from Representative Brand to Representative Cagle for her closing comments. Representative Brand.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair. I guess my only comments would be that, you know, I represent the Mankato area, and it wasn't 100 years ago. People used to take the train from the Twin Cities to Mankato, and they spent the whole weekend there. And Mankato doesn't offer the Big Lake Superior experience that Duluth does. And I know that this is going to create an amenity that is going to be an attraction for folks to come to Minnesota and be a part of the tourism landscape, but also just a better quality of life. And so I'm looking forward to this personally. I am happy to be a co-author of this bill, and thank you very much for the work.
Thank you. To the author, Chair Cagle, final comments.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. Want to remind everybody that Lake Superior is unsalted and shark-free. So me and Representative Tabke's wife have a common sweatshirt that we both really love. Also want to note that this is not Southwest Light Rail. We're not laying new lines. We're not digging tunnels. What we're really doing is making upgrades to a current line. And making investments in rail lines that will also improve our state's freight rail infrastructure and make crossings safer. Also kind of want to address to Representative Fidella's point, you know, the VA clinics and hospitals are different things. And my grandparents lived in Silver, well, my grandma still lives in Silver Bay. During the end of his life, my grandpa had to go down to the VA clinics quite often. The VA hospitals, and was often going to St. Cloud and Minneapolis. And so this is just a really great way to get people connected to those service centers along the route. And then I'm just really looking forward at putting my daughter on the train to send up to Grandpa's house in the summer so I can have some fun times. I'm really excited what this opportunity brings to our state. And I also am a big believer in our return on investment. And the return on this investment is one for every dollar we spend, we'll get five back. And so I think about all the economic development just in the capital cost of the project. And so the jobs that we are going to have with this is super important. So thank you all, and look forward to riding the train with y'all.
Thank you. With that, House File 409 as amended is laid over for possible inclusion in Omnibus Transportation Finance Bill, which we'll be considering the last week of March. Representative Tabke has an announcement.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair. Just wanted to say donuts today are from Bittner's Bakery, as was alluded to earlier, in Shakopee, in honor of those who are here often. Know that I've been having vehicle woes, and I got my truck back today. So I'm very excited. So it's an honor of having my truck back. We have donuts, and so there's a bunch left. So if anybody wants some, grab them.
Members will be meeting at our normal committee time and location next week. And with that, have a great weekend. We are adjourned.